Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Black and poor families with those Section 8 government vouchers are having a tough time finding housing when they've tried to rent through the company Evolve LLC. This according to a lawsuit spearheaded by the National Fair Housing Alliance. Why is this happening in the District of Columbia? And what can be done about it? Joining me to talk about this are Morgan Williams, General Counsel for the National Fair Housing Alliance, and Morgan Baskin, Housing Complex Reporter with the Washington City Paper. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question about this issue. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ms. Baskin and Morgan Williams, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Can you hear me? Morgan Williams.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, thank you for having us.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Mr. Williams, let me ask you first, what prompted this lawsuit against Evolve LLC?
Well, I'm a general counsel with the National Fair Housing Alliance, which is a national fair housing office based in Washington, D.C., that works with local offices across the country, including the Equal Rights Center, also based in Washington, D.C. And we were referred to a housing provider, a D.C.-based housing provider, Evolve LLC, who owned properties in Capitol Hill area and engaged in denying housing voucher holders the opportunity to rent their units. We were referred this issue, we investigated it, and we, after attempts at resolving the matter amicably with the housing provider himself, filed a lawsuit last week for a violation of D.C.'s housing rights, human rights law, which prohibits discrimination against potential renters with a housing voucher, as well as for violations of the Fair Housing Act because of the impact that it has on renters who are female-headed household or African-American.
How do you know that they were being discriminated against?
Well, discrimination in contemporary terms is oftentimes very subtle. It's referred to as discrimination with a smile or revolving door discrimination, which is to say a housing provider cognizant of the laws may welcome someone in, give them a handshake, and then offer them the door. That is why testing-based investigations or using mystery shoppers in the housing market is such an important and valuable tool in ferreting out practices of discrimination. Here, in regards to Evolve's practices in their source of income discrimination or discrimination against housing voucher holders in the D.C. area, this was a case of sort of blatant policy and practice. No Section 8 was advertised. The website platform that Evolve has administered would not allow you to proceed through to scheduling an appointment if you were identified in its question about whether or not you're a voucher holder as a voucher holder. And even if you called to follow up, Evolve staff and co-owners themselves denied you expressly because of the fact that you are a voucher holder. So here we use testing-based investigations in order to ferret out discrimination, but it was, we allege, a very overt practice of discrimination against voucher holders in D.C.
Ms. Baskin, you have been covering this issue for the Washington City Paper. In your reporting at the very beginning of this particular case, what did you find?
Well, something that's, you know, really interesting to me that Mr. Williams pointed out is that discrimination is often very subtle. So a lot of times when you're a low-income person in the district and you're looking to rent and you have a voucher, it's really hard to stand up for yourself and to know what your rights are when you're being shown the door and there's not a blatant act of discrimination. So, you know, in a little over a year that I've been doing this kind of reporting, I've spoken with so many tenants who have said, you know, I just have a feeling that the reason they canceled my showing was because they found out that I'm a voucher holder, or you know, they found out that I had an eviction record and so they showed me the door. These types of discriminations manifest in a lot of different ways, but the thing that really struck me in the time that I've been doing this reporting is how subtle it can often be, and how difficult it is for tenants who don't have easy access to a lawyer to stand up for themselves and to fight against these practices.
Give me an example of the subtleties of that you're speaking about.
So some of the most common cases that I see are when tenants go look for housing in neighborhoods, even in more affluent areas of the district, where their vouchers worth or reimbursed at higher rates. They're often told that the landlord would no longer be able to make a second appointment to meet with them to show them their apartment. So after an initial meeting and it becomes clear, you know, what type of income they have or where their income comes from, if that's a voucher or alimony, social security, disability payments, they're sort of shown the door and ushered out of the process of finding that apartment or leasing up.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about black and poor families with Section 8 government vouchers having a tough time finding housing. This is the basis of a lawsuit that has been filed against a housing provider in the District of Columbia. My guests are Morgan Williams, General Counsel for the National Fair Housing Alliance, and Morgan Baskin, a housing complex reporter with the Washington City Paper. If you have a comment or a question about this particular case or housing discrimination in the district, please give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Mr. Williams, do I have the right to refuse a prospective renter that happens to be using Section 8, who perhaps would not normally be able to afford an apartment that I am renting?
In D.C., the answer is very simply no. D.C. local statute, their human rights law, specifically prohibits housing discrimination on the basis of whether a prospective tenant is using a housing voucher. That's a Section 8 voucher or a voucher through the Housing Choice Voucher Program or other various public assistance programs. It's, I think, also in a community like D.C., where there is such a deep affordable housing crisis that is hitting low-income renters the hardest. And when that is overlaid on the fact that we live in such a racially and economically divided country, when you have that kind of a practice of not admitting someone on the basis of whether they have a voucher, in addition to the straight prohibition that's expressed under local D.C. law, there's a very direct impact that that kind of a practice has on the basis of race and familial status, whether or not you have kids, as well as female-headed households. And so it would be regarded under the Federal Fair Housing Act as having a disparate impact and therefore being regarded as a violation under the law, under federal laws as well.
You said in D.C. Are there places in other states where you can legally refuse a Section 8 housing voucher?
Well, yes. It's a patchwork of local rights that exists across the country. There are 7 federally protected classes under the Fair Housing Act. And as I mentioned, the practice of discrimination against someone on the basis of whether or not they have a voucher may have a disparate impact in many communities on the basis of race, national origin, familial status, or other protected classes. However, the specific protection against discrimination on the basis of whether or not you have a voucher is something that's afforded by a number of states and cities, including New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, as well as other jurisdictions across the country. However, there are jurisdictions such as Louisiana or other jurisdictions across the country in which there are no express local protections against discrimination on the basis of whether or not you have a housing voucher.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about a housing discrimination case in the District of Columbia. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give me a call. Before I go to the phone lines, Ms. Baskin, how exactly do these housing vouchers work? Who gets them? Who is, and how do you get one?
Sure. So the answer in the district is a little bit complicated, but the majority...
Of course it is.
Of course it is, right? So the D.C. Housing Authority, our public housing agency, is the local agency that's responsible for distributing housing vouchers. So the agency is bifurcated into two main programs. The first is its public housing stock, of which there are about 59 properties that the Housing Authority owns and runs. And the second program that the Housing Authority manages is its voucher system. So it gets most of its money from the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. Some of the money for vouchers come from local subsidies, so directed by and from the D.C. Council. And the wait list right now to get a housing voucher from the D.C. Housing Authority is about 40,000 people long.
Wow.
It's an extraordinary waiting list, which goes to show you the deep and very real material need for affordable housing in the district. And so it's difficult. People will be waiting decades to get a housing voucher.
So how do you get one when, let's say, you're next in line? Say you are number 39,999.
Sure. Well, there are, in my understanding, close to 24 different types of voucher programs, and the D.C. Housing Authority works very closely with other district agencies for certain protected classes. So if you're a veteran, there might be a different way to get a voucher. You know, if you're a senior, there are a few different programs, so they're not necessarily all funneled through one main program, if that makes sense. But traditionally, the Housing Choice Voucher Program, when you are next in line to get a voucher, the Housing Authority will show you, will give you, essentially, they'll reimburse you for the money that you spend on rent, or in some cases, if a family can't make enough to cover their rent, the Housing Authority will pay a landlord directly once you've selected a property on the market, and you pay the Housing Authority then back for your percentage of the rent.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Desi, calling from Southeast D.C. Thanks for calling, Desi. What's on your mind?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, great. I have a twofold concern. My first concern is that I'm a Housing Choice Voucher participant. And back in 2004, when I finally got my voucher, after being on the list for 10 years, I got my voucher. And at that time, the opportunities for moving in any of the wards was much greater than it is now. And I have a concern about that. And unfortunately, I'm unable to attend any of the meetings that the Housing Authority holds for residents who have concerns. But now, the voucher, the value of your voucher changes depending on the subdivision in the city. And right now, the vouchers are more valuable in areas that people really don't want to live in. And they are less valuable in areas that people would love to live in, and areas that I've lived in previously. I have a concern about that, and I don't know how that works and how they determine that, but that's a discrimination issue in itself. The other one...
Go ahead, real quick.
Okay, real quick. And the other one is I've faced discrimination, and realtors and whoever's showing the properties, they are well-versed in how to handle us. They allow you to come and view the property. They talk to you as if you are just one of the regular people that are coming, but they really know they are not going to pursue you any further. And so that protects them in a way of a participant being able to challenge that and say that there's discrimination going on.
Let me see let me see what Mr. Williams has to say about this. Mr. Williams, does this sound familiar to you? It sounds to me like he's talking about redlining, for example, but rental redlining instead of purchasing redlining.
Indeed. Well, if you're discriminating against a voucher holder in a particular neighborhood that might have a lot of amenities in terms of education or employment or healthcare services or general wealth, then if you're engaged in discrimination against voucher holders in those kinds of communities, then it will serve to perpetuate segregation in the same way that traditional redlining practices did. Debbie, in response to your two questions, and I'm sure, you know, my colleague on the call here would also have some insights, but very briefly, on your first point, there are very real issues with how vouchers are priced and the extent to which that allows voucher-holding tenants to be able to access different neighborhoods. Traditionally, the voucher was set at the fair market rent of the whole region, which meant that inherently you were priced out of being able to access higher opportunity areas, as it's referred to, or areas with higher rents than the fair market rent. HUD is in the course of experimenting and developing programming with the housing voucher program that sets the fair market rent on smaller areas than the whole region, which would hopefully allow voucher holders to be able to access different rent rates that would be better calibrated to ensure they're able to access housing in any region, despite whether it's valued highly in a poor neighborhood or not, to your question. And on the second issue, the kind of discrimination that you're talking about with housing providers or real estate agents that are savvy about the law but still may be facilitated discriminatory practices, that's exactly the kind of instance where fair housing testing or sending in mystery shoppers in an investigation in a controlled fashion can show that over a period of time, these real estate agents or other housing service providers consistently didn't service the voucher holders. And even though they did it with a smile, that can still be used as evidence for discrimination. And I know there's a phone number for folks who want to call in, but I also, Debbie, want to give you one phone number for the Equal Rights Center. This is an office that's based in D.C. that carries out these testing investigations. Their main line is 202-234-3062. That's the Equal Rights Center. Their main line is 202-234-3062. And that's an office that can, upon different referrals of different housing providers or real estate agents that may be engaged in these practices, carry out the testing investigation to see if they are discriminating, even if it's with a smile.
Desi, thank you so much. I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about housing discrimination in the District of Columbia. Lots of questions, and I'm sure you have quite a few as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141. April from Maryland, you're next. Do not hang up. You will hear the program again. 202-319-7816. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about black and poor families with Section 8 government vouchers and the tough time some of them are having in the district finding housing. A new lawsuit alleges that they've been turned away in some cases. My guests are Morgan Williams, General Counsel for the National Fair Housing Alliance, and Morgan Baskin, Housing Complex Editor with the Washington City Paper. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ms. Baskin, I find all of this quite fascinating, particularly our last caller saying that, for lack of a better term, all vouchers are not created equal. How are they priced, and how does that work depending on where you want to live?
So the answer to that, again, is a little bit complicated, naturally. But the Housing Authority does have a different sort of calculus to determine what the fair market rent is or the reimbursement rates are for vouchers, depending on what part of the city that you're living in. So if you were to live in Capitol Hill, for example, you'd be reimbursed at a higher rate, or a landlord would be reimbursed at a higher rate than you would if you were to live in, say, Deanwood, because a two-bedroom apartment rents for wildly different prices in those two neighborhoods. And doing that, it, from the Housing Authority's perspective, is a couple of things. It incentivizes more landlords and more affluent neighborhoods to want to rent to folks who are voucher holders, because it gives them a financial incentive to do so.
It's guaranteed money, I would imagine.
Right. And the other part of that is it allows low-income renters who maybe wouldn't have the upward mobility to live in more affluent neighborhoods to move into other parts of the city where they usually wouldn't.
What is the percentage? Let us say, for example, we have seen in some of the more affluent communities in D.C., whether it's Capitol Hill or the entertainment district on U Street, where you may have a $3,500 a month or $4,000 a month rental. Are all apartments in the district, are there set-asides for low-income renting? My first question. And secondly, if you have a voucher, what percentage of rent is perhaps reimbursed out of a $4,000 a month rent?
So to your first question, are there set-aside apartments? I think the answer here is a little bit tricky, and it takes us outside of the D.C. Housing Authority. So the District of Columbia has a number of programs that aim to be more inclusive for low-income renters, even if you're not a voucher holder. So we have the Inclusionary Zoning Program that requires new developments with greater than, I believe, 10 or 15 units of housing to set aside 8 to 10% of that housing for market rate or slightly below market rate rentals, so that it's affordable to people that live in what we might call workforce housing, or who might require deeply affordable housing. So families that make less than the area median income. So the Inclusionary Zoning Program is one way that we set aside units in new developments and in more affluent parts of the city to make sure that rental housing is more inclusive for people across the income spectrum. And to your second question, what percent is the reimbursement rate? So it depends on the family and it depends on the voucher program, but typically a family would pay no more than 30% of their income for rental housing if they're a voucher holder.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. April calling from Maryland. April, thanks for April, give us a call back if you can. Let me go to Eric calling from Southeast DC. Eric, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. My thought that I'd like to share is that the problem is actually twofold. It's not just tenants or low income tenants' inability to find rent, but it's also DC Housing Authority's inability to protect the owners, their assets in terms of their property when these tenants move in. And once again, I'm stereotyping, I don't believe in that, but when certain problematic tenants move in and destroy the property, disrupt the community in the sense of the peace or the harmony of the community between the neighbors, and when the owners reach out to DC Housing, there's nothing done. And when these tenants are finally removed or evicted after the owner has incurred a significant amount of financial damage and responsibility due to renting their property and participating in the program, there's nothing that can be done for them. And I believe that this whole process is giving the owners who want to rent, who have properties, want to participate in the program, it's, you know, for lack of a better word, bastardizing them for their reluctance to continue to participate when they're burned and then there's no avenue of redress.
Mr. Williams, your thoughts about what Eric is sharing with us?
Well, certainly a tenant that damages a unit, you know, is in violation of the lease, and as you said, Eric, subject to eviction. And when one is subject to eviction, that's also subject to termination and involvement in the voucher program. And I think, you know, as any landlord can understand, there are tenants that may be problematic. That may be the case with voucher tenants. It may be the case with private tenants who are not otherwise voucher holders. And that is a risk that landlords bear in engaging in the market and in, you know, seeking business enterprise in the market. The segregated nature of the country that we live in was centuries in the making, resulting from government policy and housing industry practices and individual acts of discrimination. And the civil rights laws that we have in place that oversee actions in the employment sector and, as we're talking about today, the housing sector, are cognizant of that history and of the segregation that we live with today as a function of that history. And a part of being a housing provider in today's housing market is reckoning with the laws that are in place in order to ensure that there is open housing choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that comes with certain responsibilities, and I can sympathize with the concerns that Eric is noting, but would note that they must be understood in a broader context as well. Mm-hmm.
Eric, thank you so much. Any thoughts you want to share with us about that, Ms. Baskin?
Well, I will say that prompted in part by concerns like these and noting that there are some landlords who are reluctant to rent to voucher holders because of a perception that those voucher holders wouldn't be as good a tenant as somebody who doesn't have a voucher. The Department of Human Services in D.C. has actually partnered with an organization called CNHED to create a fund called the Landlord Partnership Fund. And even though that fund doesn't deal with voucher holders specifically, it does or it has created a pool of money to sort of support landlords who are willing to rent units out to folks who are in DHS's Permanent Supportive Housing Program, its Rapid Rehousing Program, to ensure that if there is property damage or unpaid rent, the landlord isn't on the hook for those costs. So there are efforts in D.C. to sort of ameliorate concerns like these, not even just with the Housing Authority, but across other housing programs as well.
Eric, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. That was going to be my next question. How responsive is the Housing Authority to situations where landlords may have issues with Section 8 voucher holders?
I do think, as Mr. Williams pointed out, that there are some legitimate concerns. But, you know, over the past several decades, I think it's been a real challenge for the Housing Authority to appear sensitive to the needs and balance equally the needs of its tenants and its clients and of the landlords who are also responsible for providing tens of thousands of housing units to families in the district. So obviously those relationships are incredibly important. It's important for the Housing Authority to be responsive. I think it's been one of the agency's goals over the last few years to improve those relationships because it's obviously in the interest of the Housing Authority you know, to appear responsive and receptive to the concerns of landlords who are renting to their clients.
One of the things that I find really interesting is that the vouchers do not last forever. Isn't that correct? In other words, if you can't find housing within a certain amount of time, do you lose the voucher eligibility? How does that work?
That's right. So actually, there are separate guidelines that HUD sets and that public housing authorities across the country have, but the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development requires public housing authorities to provide tenants with at least 60 days after the receipt of a voucher to find a housing accommodation on the private market. In D.C., voucher holders have 6 months to do so. So after a family gets a voucher, they have 6 months basically to find a housing accommodation. And after that point, after those 6 months are up, if they face source of income discrimination, you know, or any other kind of discrimination, they can't find a housing unit, their voucher would be terminated.
So they would have to reapply?
That's correct. They'd have to go back on the waiting list.
What part do you believe that the changing nature of the district's population, the rising cost of housing? I'm a native, and so I'm always amazed at just how expensive it is to, you know, to live here. But what impact do you believe perhaps gentrification, as well as just the market charging whatever it will bear for housing, has on the situation?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is it has an incredible impact, and we've seen that over the last couple of decades. There have been a number of studies that have come out, even in just the last month, showing that D.C. is one of the few jurisdictions in the country where gentrification itself is a main cause of displacement. I mean, you know, we're talking about a case with Evolve LLC, which is, you know, allegedly engaging in this kind of discrimination on Capitol Hill. That's one of the neighborhoods where predominantly Black families and low-income families in the district have been displaced the most. So I think that you have to look at the two in conjunction with each other, because they don't exist in isolation. And certainly it makes it more difficult for the Housing Authority to do its job when it's trying to compete with rising rental prices.
Mm. You mentioned earlier about the Equal Rights Center and testing, Mr. Williams. Outside of this lawsuit against Evolve LLC, do you have any evidence or any thoughts about how widespread this issue is?
Absolutely. It's, I think, unfortunately, significantly prevalent, despite the clear laws prohibiting discrimination against whether or not you're a tenant with a voucher holder. The prevalence of it may be sort of, you know, straight denial, or it may be more subtle. But in either case, it's illegal. And for anyone that has experienced discrimination because they have a voucher, or because they perceive potential racial discrimination or discrimination on the basis of national origin or otherwise, the Equal Rights Center, which is our local partner in D.C., and assists individual complainants to follow up with testing-based investigations, is a great resource. I'll once again just read their number for any listeners that are interested in calling them to file a complaint for an investigation. Their number is 202-234-3062. That's 202-234-3062.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Peggy calling from D.C. Peggy, if you are on the line, please hang on. We will talk to you after this break. And, of course, we still have more questions about what happens next, and not just with this particular lawsuit, but also
crisisline.net.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about allegations of discrimination against holders of Section 8 housing vouchers here in the District of Columbia. Let me go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Peggy, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Peggy. What's on your mind?
Yes, good afternoon. Hi. I used to work for housing back in the 60s when they first started the Section 8, and I want someone to correct me if I'm wrong. At that time, a percentage of housing, be it reconstruction or new construction, that a percentage had to go to seniors, low income, or people with disabilities. Has that law changed?
Go right ahead, Mr. Williams.
No, the vouchers are restricted. They're income-restricted vouchers, so they go to very low-income households. There are some set-aside programs for seniors, and there are some set-aside programs as Ms. Baskin noted, for other special populations, whether those are veterans or people with certain disabilities, as you noted in your question. That's correct. Voucher holders are restricted in terms of who may access using the voucher housing voucher assistance program.
Okay. Peggy, thank you so much for your phone call. Let's go to Nikki, calling from Southeast D.C. Nikki, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm Nikki from Southeast, and I enlisted in the military so I could get these benefits. But every time I go to a rent office with my Section 8 to try to get a place, they'll say the rent is $900, but then after the Section 8 contract is signed, it's $1,500 for the raggedy one-bedroom apartment. That's discrimination because they rise up the rent after you have signed a lease with them.
What are you hearing in that, Mr. Williams? What's going on there?
Yeah, so that kind of a practice would be a violation of the housing authority's rules and would be a problem in its misuse of the voucher program by landlords who are manipulating their rent to try to get more revenue from the voucher program. The kind of discrimination that we're focused on is really denying tenants when they are denied because they have a voucher or because of their race or national origin or some other protection. So the civil rights laws are specifically meant to protect tenants who may face discrimination on because of their characteristics or because they have a voucher. The kind of misuse of the program that you're talking about would be a violation of the rules, but not necessarily a violation of the civil rights laws that we're enforcing in our office. If that's an answer to your question.
Okay. Nikki, thank you so much for your phone call. What else have you found in this extensive reporting that you've done, Ms. Baskin, in covering this particular issue of late?
Well, something that's interesting and to sort of take a wider look at the problem than just at the voucher program specifically is that simultaneously, as we're dealing with all of these challenges with the voucher program, the public housing stock itself, those 59 complexes that I mentioned earlier, are in horrible disrepair. So the housing authority is facing not just the challenges of a wait list of 40,000 people that they're trying to get through and give vouchers to, but they're also facing billions of dollars worth of construction needs to fix the public housing stock that it does own. So the challenge for the D.C. Housing Authority in the coming years is balancing both of those needs and simultaneously, you know, asking HUD for more money, for more vouchers, which it has to the tune of about 2,500 vouchers in order to rehome families that are living in horrifying conditions in its public housing stock. So at this point, the Housing Authority is sort of having to ask itself what its priorities are and what it does with the families that are living in really dilapidated housing where the infrastructure is faulty, where there are infestations of bed bugs and cockroaches and rats, where there's sewage leaking through the walls, really horrifying conditions, and asking themselves, you know, when we get more vouchers from HUD, if we do, who do we give them to? And so that's a challenge for the Housing Authority as well.
So where does this money come from? Are we talking about federal money that trickles down to the D.C. government? Are we talking about more money from the D.C. government coffers directly to pay for these kinds of things?
So we're talking about both. And it's interesting now we're going through budget season with the D.C. Council and engaging pretty frequently in these conversations about what kind of money the D.C. Council should be allocating to the D.C. Housing Authority for a lot of these needs. So while the D.C. Housing Authority has asked HUD for more vouchers, for thousands more vouchers, the director is also going to the D.C. Council and saying, look, these are our capital needs. Can you help us out here?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Williams, you mentioned, again, the testing. So what happens if I'm a Section 8 voucher holder and I suspect that I've been discriminated against and we go through the testing process and we find that this has indeed happened? What happens next?
Absolutely. So if you were to contact the Equal Rights Center at that number and they were to carry out a testing investigation, and testing, again, is where you send out mystery shoppers in a very controlled fashion, and usually you do it in a masked pair scenario where you send out one mystery shopper who doesn't have a voucher and one who does, one who's white and one who's black. And in that kind of a situation, you look at all the characteristics that a landlord might look at in renting to a prospective tenant, their income, even their credit history, other kinds of factors, and you might make that tenant with a voucher, even if you include the voucher, perhaps even a little bit more qualified. And you look at the difference in treatment. And if you see that difference in treatment in that kind of a context where all the other factors are balanced in favor of the person who's supposed to be protected and they're still discriminated against, then courts will use that as evidence of discrimination. So even if you're getting that smile and that walk out the door, you can still prove that there was discriminatory treatment that went on.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard any response from Evolve LLC after the filing of this lawsuit?
We, in an effort to resolve the matter amicably, filed an administrative complaint with the Office of Human Rights against Evolve for this alleged discrimination. In the course of that process, we engaged in mediation, which is routine for that administrative complaint process. So we have met face-to-face with defendants here. Unfortunately, we were not able to resolve the matter amicably at that stage. And so just last week, we filed this lawsuit in federal court. We have not conferred with Evolve about the lawsuit since we have filed it.
What, in your opinion, would be an amicable resolution?
Absolutely. Well, ultimately, we're looking for a commitment to refrain from the practice, to engage in various actions to remediate what we perceive as real damage to the housing market that their discriminatory practices have done, which could be affirmative advertising. It could be setting aside units for voucher holders regarding future units that may become available. We're looking for damages for our office, for the investigation that we conducted, as well as attorney's fees. So that's generally in regards to these kinds of discrimination cases. In instances where there's an individual complainant, we'd be seeking damages for that individual complainant. In instances like this case, in which there's an organizational complainant, our office, the National Fair Housing Alliance, we're seeking real changes in the market, affirmative steps to counteract what we perceive as injury in the market, and then damages to compensate for the investigation that we undertook to prove the discrimination.
Ms. Baskin, some final thoughts from you about where we are regarding this housing issue and these allegations of discrimination in the district.
So the thing that I would probably want to add last is that the cases that we're aware of are obviously egregious, which is why we're talking about them. They're also probably a fraction of what's occurring because we don't know what we don't know. So we know that, or we know that there are allegations against Evolve for engaging this kind of behavior, but who knows how many other landlords are out there engaging in the same sort of practices who get to fly under the radar because maybe they don't own thousands of properties across the district. They only have four or five or a dozen. And that's another important part of this, too. There are a lot of mom-and-pop landlords, as we call them, you know, people that only own a handful of properties that will rent to voucher holders, which is not to say that all landlords engage in this kind of behavior. That's certainly not true. There are a lot of really good actors that are important. But, you know, certainly it's troubling to hear about cases like Evolve because it sort of begs the question how many others like them are out there. So, you know, if you're a tenant who feels like you're being discriminated against, you can obviously go to the Housing Authority, to the Office of the Tenant Advocate, and there are a number of legal service organizations around the district that handle cases like this, too.
Morgan Williams and Morgan Baskin, thank you both for talking to us. A great conversation. And certainly, as always, this podcast will be on our website on WHUR.com after 9 o'clock this evening, as well as the phone number and resources brought up during the course of this conversation. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, May 1st. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.